in the next phase of Jesus' life, he does a very interesting thing with personal relationships. He clarifies the basis of personal relationships. He clarifies what attitude we should take toward customs, and he clarifies the attitude we should take toward institutions. We have a different relationship to each other than animals have to each other. Animals have very set patterns by which they relate one to another. You can predict the behavior of an animal toward his own kind because an animal is guided by instinct. He has not moved out of his instinctual life into a mental life in which he is confused because he no longer has a built-in repetitive automatic response. We have so gone away from that, that the law that was brought into codification by Moses, the intricate system of law, was a substitute for the instincts and the behavior patterns of animals. If you don't know the law, you don't know what to do. And if you don't follow the law, I can't count on you. So those are the human agreements that help us to understand what we're supposed to do and what we can expect from each other once we move out of the animal kingdom. So customs are very important. The customs that we observe, we pretty much know when somebody invites us to dinner what we're going to have to do and what they're going to be doing. They don't take us by surprise. If somebody invited you to dinner, there was no table, you sat on the floor, you were expected to take your shoes and stockings off and eat with your forefoot, you know, just with your finger. You'd be sort of up against it. At least they would have to redefine the agreements, because when you go, you expect to sit at the table, find a knife and a fork and a plate and a napkin and drink from a glass. Isn't that right? So even if they passed a common cup, somebody'd have to explain it, because you don't do that. So we count on customs. And we don't realize how automatically we count on customs. And I think we would be very disturbed if all of a sudden we were transported from our customs into an entirely different culture. It doesn't mean our customs are any better than theirs. It just means they're familiar. And being familiar, we like them, right or wrong. We just like them. They're our customs. So Jesus is going to do an interesting thing with those. The first thing that he does is to clarify the basis of relationship, personal relationship. And the basis of personal relationship, if you are in his way, is that you relate to people the same as if you were a physician. You know, that statement helped me a lot because there's a great deal of confusion in our minds about love. What does loving your fellow man mean? Most of us find our fellow man very, very difficult to love. As a matter of fact, downright irritating most of the time, and there are very few attractive ones. We are exceptions. You have to go out there. And I don't think that we have thought very profoundly if we have not thought about the difficulty of loving our fellow man. And so you wonder what that really means, because if you take the way seriously, you have to say that you must master the love of your fellow man. Most of us feel that we should like people. You know, I should like them. And we don't like to say that we don't, or that we even have preferences. We like some better than others, and that we have our preferences for some people, just like you have preferences for colors and for interiors of houses and automobiles. And that becomes very confusing. So this particular situation where Jesus is eating with publicans and sinners is the way it is described. A publican was a Jew who collected taxes for the Romans, and they weren't popular. They were out of the pale of the brotherhood. I would suppose so. There they are, playing the game with the Romans, collecting taxes from you and paying to the Romans, so those are the publicans. And the sinners, we don't know what they were, but they obviously were lawbreakers. So he's eating with publicans and sinners. And people say that if you had it, you wouldn't be mixing with those people. That is why we call it the definition of how you relate to your fellow man. And he said that those who were well have no need of a physician. And so he puts himself in the category, or makes the analogy, that he relates to people in terms of their need. And that is a beautiful thing. Now, you can't do that if you haven't got anything that will fulfill their need. So it assumes that if you're really going to adopt this attitude, you would have to master the way, so when you relate to people, you relate to them in terms of something that you can do for them in terms of their need. Now, there are many things that have to be mastered, not the least of which is the right function, and the right function is love. So you have to master love, it seems to me, before we understand completely what it would mean to relate to other people as a physician. It's always helped me a lot, because I feel that if I were a physician and people came into my office, that there would be no question that I would rather have them come in bathed and clean and smelling good. See, there would be a preference, but you would not minister to them any more than you would minister to the other person. And that is where love is cleared up. You would do for both people the same, but you would say, I prefer it this way. That's legitimate. And that eliminates the total confusion. You give the same. You do for the same. You don't do for the one that you prefer or the one that you feel more congenial with. Whatever the need is, if you have it to do, you do it. And you still reserve the right to have your preferences, but they should not influence you. Now, that eliminates a lot of problems if you get that straight. So that is a very important definition. You relate to people as a physician. Those that are well have no need of a physician. It's the people with some need that relate in order to have that need fulfilled. That is the definition of our relationship to other people. You do not relate ultimately to get something from people. When you master the way, you relate to people to fulfill their need. And if you do that, your need is already taken care of by that action. And that is the fulfilled life. And it's a beautiful thing, a wonderful thing. And all of you know that, because all of you are doing that. That there is a satisfaction in sharing the life of the Spirit with human beings that is not in a category with any other satisfaction in life. Not any. To be able to communicate something as important and as basic as the life of the Spirit. In terms of customs, we have to relate with appropriateness. They are criticizing him because he is not fasting on the correct day. And he makes a strange analogy. He suggests that when the bridegroom is present, the people in the bridegroom's party should not be fasting. It's only after the bridegroom has departed that it's appropriate for them to fast. And if you think of it, you can explain both ways. You can say he referred to himself as the bridegroom, which is possible, or that he referred to a marriage situation, because that would indicate the inappropriateness of fasting in a marriage feast. And so you can take it either way. while he is there communicating and teaching, that is really the relevant thing, and fasting is not the issue, or that you have to make the decision about the appropriate time to fast, and you don't fast by the calendar. So that if we propose fasting a day a week because we want to save the money to do something with, that becomes an appropriate reason for fasting, to save the money to do something with the money. But just to fast, or to fast because you want to have your head clear, or to fast because you've been eating too much, there are reasons to fast, but not automatically fasting because the calendar says fast. So that is the way you relate to your customs. So customs have to be evaluated, and they have to be appropriate, and they have to be relevant, and they are not sacred. And that is what Jesus showed you by breaking the fast rules. And he got into trouble and he was criticized. Then on the Sabbath, which was an institution, it's the fourth commandment of the Ten Commandments. I asked Harry, he looked it up, the fourth one. And there it's more serious. An institution is something more serious. And it wasn't that he completely broke it. It was that at the time where Jesus was living, the people were being ground down by the law, absolutely overwhelmed with the law. And he was, again, evaluating the relevance of the law. So that the thing that was he was being criticized for was that he was plucking the ears of corn on a Sunday and eating them. And he said that even the priests do it, that there is not a totality of agreement here on who can break the law and who shouldn't break the law. And for them, it was appropriate to do what they were doing. So he announced something extraordinarily radical, that the Sabbath was made for man and not man for the Sabbath. That was very radical. In other words, the institutions should serve the people and not the people be ground up in the institutions. We could very well take all of that to heart today. It's very serious to set apart the institutions also. Flaunt the institutions. Do away with the institutions. It should never be taken lightly. And in one of the documents, the alternate documents, there is a footnote that says that Jesus was one day on a Sabbath walking along and he saw a man plowing his field. And he said to the man, "Man, if thou knowest what thou doest, thou art blessed. But if thou knowest not, thou art a sinner and a transgressor of the law." So you have to know what you're doing and from what base you're doing it. And you don't just take matters in your own hand and flaunt customs and flaunt institutions and flaunt conventions. You have to think it out and make sure that it is right and appropriate and that you're doing it from a right base. And I think that's a beautiful thing to have in one of the footnotes in one of the documents of the book of Luke, to indicate that he was not just flaunting the law. You have to know what you're doing. And so it's in the record.